Hi, I'm Mark Woods here with another Page One podcast. We haven't had one in maybe a month or so, and got kind of a special one. We have Nate Monroe, Chris Hong, and David Bauerlein, who I don't know what they've been up to lately. Obviously covering, well, Chris became a father in that last month. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So we're high budget here. We're working with one microphone for the three of them. But yeah, I kind of want to go back to last year. You know, you guys did such amazing work and gave me Calm Father here and there. So when I get pats on the back, I always say, of course, it was the three of you that did all the grunt work of uncovering a lot of the JAA stuff. You know, we've had 2020. It seems like it's been just a fire hose of nonstop stuff, even continuing into 2020. We've had Aaron Zahn fired with cause, the changing of the board, you know, the transcripts of the city attorney's interviews, Chris's story on the plane trip to a Braves game, investigation starting. But I kind of wanted to go back to maybe a year ago. And first of all, maybe, yeah, where were we a year ago? So, you know, February. So David's going to start.
A year ago this time, JA had kind of faded. It was in the background. We were heading into the mayor's race, so the mayor was saying that he wasn't going to advance anything about JEA. JEA had started a strategic alternative study, but it was all about a 10-year, let's make JEA better, let's get it ready to face all these challenges that are up ahead. So JEA had really, as far as the sale of it, had kind of disappeared as a public debate, other than some people, it turned out accurately, in the mayor's race saying that they fully expected that as soon as Curry won re-election, that JEA would come back, roaring back. And in fact, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I feel like at that point, it was kind of just you guys were the ones keeping it in the news. So yeah, how did you go about getting at stuff at that point? And what was your...
Well, to David's point, I mean, it was always clear that the JEA sale was going to come back. Like, when people ask me, you know, oh gosh, you know, you predicted this in columns before it happened. How did you know? I mean, I wish they had been a bit more clever about it so I could claim that we were smart for figuring it out. I mean, it was just, you know, the mayor gave this lawyerly sort of BS-y answer in a mayoral debate about, you know, I won't bring back, I personally will not introduce legislation to sell JEA. And I mean, there's just this gaping, this gaping loophole in that statement. And, you know, true to his word, he did not introduce legislation to sell JEA. JEA just put itself out for sale. And, you know, Aaron Zahn had been giving these presentations about JEA's future that kind of implied that JEA had no future unless it underwent some massive change. I mean, this was a really thinly veiled effort to privatize it. I mean, so like I said, I wish we could all claim that we were geniuses for figuring this out, but I mean, it was always pretty obvious. And in fact, the day that the board approved privatization, the chairman of the board, Alan Howard, even sort of said, and I don't know if this was kind of a middle finger to everyone or what, but he said, you know, if you had been paying attention, you won't be surprised by what we're about to do.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, Alan Howard to this day says that, you know, what happened on that day was a continuation of a year-long conversation. However, it was a conversation that was supposed to have stopped, you know, when the JEA board of directors issued or told the senior staff to not discuss or move forward with privatization until, you know, the board gave them permission to do so.
But I feel like, so what was the date of that? July 23rd?
July 23rd.
So I feel like even then, though, it was kind of you guys leading the, hey, trying to raise the red flags. Because at that point, there's still, you know, maybe there's...
Yeah, so Aaron was on this, like, campaign to convince utility ratepayers and like civic leaders, you know, that JEA was in some sort of financial trouble, you know, that the future was grim, and that because advances in solar battery technology and solar technology that would basically allow anyone to just hop off the grid by installing a couple batteries in their garage, some solar panels on the roofs of their houses. And so, you know, he was like, he spent like, I think after the election was, you know, going to civic groups and going on talk radio shows, talking about how JEA needed to, you know, break free of the status quo and find a new way to, you know, survive in the future. And I think anyone who'd been paying attention saw like, oh, okay, I know exactly what's going on here.
Yeah. And I think Nate frequently pointed out how they're saying one thing, you know, when they're talking to regulators, saying another when they're talking to customers, and it was these very different stories.
There was so much of that going on. I mean, these clowns still won't acknowledge that they were trying to privatize JEA. Like, to this day, they will not just admit that they were trying to sell the utility. It's like, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to add to that as well. Basically, I think there was this sense, too, after the JEA board made its vote July 23rd, that from JEA's perspective, everything should just go into sort of this vault of secrecy for 6 months until they emerge with this sort of an actual proposal, a deal. And so, and for a while that was the case, I think. I mean, there was not really much comment coming from city council, not a whole lot of comment from civic leaders. And so it took a while for that to actually thaw out and people to say, you know what, this is a huge issue. It's potentially the biggest change in 50 years of consolidated city government. But for a while, other than maybe the media stories, there was nothing happening in terms of anybody stirring the pot and asking just, what is this all about?
Right, and I feel like that's when you guys did some of your strongest work, because it wasn't stuff that was out in public meetings, and there wasn't even a ton of documents to work with. So how were you, you know, without giving away sources or anything, how were you getting at these stories? How would you explain that to people?
I think it was a combination of, we did have some sources within JEA and outside of JEA who were able to help talk us through some of the technical aspects of a sale, some of the financial realities facing utilities. And, you know, we were able to get over time, either through the normal public records process or other means, documents that did shed light on, some of what JEA had been up to. You know, you talked about these different forecasts that JEA was providing to the board and to regulators. Well, you know, in that case, it was as simple as pulling the regulatory document from the state and holding it up to the slideshow presentation they gave the board of directors and just asking some basic questions like, why does one have a 5% increase in sales in 10 years and the other has an 8% decline in 10 years? Like, this is just stuff like that that just never made sense.
Mm-hmm. And it was fun watching the three of you work, because it's three different personalities. I think probably you'd say Nate and David are a little different in personality, and then hearing Chris do interviews on the phone, and Nate paces, I think Mary Kelly, our boss, which we should give credit to her, because she shepherded this whole process. But yeah, watching the three of you work was fun and interesting. And then there were some like 5 p.m. email dumps, and when you'd be going through stuff, so a lot of it is not exciting stuff, but you would get excited about what you were finding.
I agree with that, Mark. I mean, I've said too that I think we all played to our strengths in terms of how we covered it, and that's a really good point. I mean, I'd come into the building, here we are at the Wells Fargo Tower, and I'd be walking up towards the escalators and I'd see Nate pacing back and forth, and that was just constant. I used to wonder what people who work here wonder, what's that guy pacing back and forth for all the time? But that was Nate just burning up the cell phone for, you know, hours at a time, taking calls, following up. He just had a wealth of sources that they didn't just materialize. You really did a great job cultivating all those sources and then wrote some great columns out of it. And then Chris did some fantastic reporting on just drilling down and finding all the layers within layers of all these contracts and actually figuring out who was getting the money and how all that was set up and structured. And Chris has done great reporting on that on the past. So it was always a pleasure listening to Chris conduct his interviews.
Yeah, Chris does not let somebody off the hook easily.
Not being willing to just take the easy answer. And I think, you know, if you look at our desk, I'm the one who's got a big box full of documents, and I've emptied out a few markers underlining stuff. So we each had our own different forte, and I thought that was one reason why, as a three of us together, along with, quite frankly, Mark, a lot of your columns, were able to really attack this from so many different angles. And we probably wouldn't have been able to individually cover it as comprehensively as we did. It was a real pleasure to be able to work in that way on this.
No,
Yeah, you're definitely right about that, David.
I think we were also served really well by the fact that the three of us have covered city government and JEA for years now. Like, Chris and I have both been here 7 years. JEA was like part of my daily beat when I started here. And so, I mean, some of the people at JEA I've known and worked with, you know, for years. David's covered, you know, Jacksonville for decades. And, you know, it has covered JEA as part of his beat over time. And, like, I just think that familiarity with the familiarity with the terrain was something that really helped us. You know, it's, again, like when you talk about sources and having relationships and knowing where to get documents and who to talk to. I mean, that stuff really did really helped.
Yeah, it's been interesting as this has played out to go back and read, you know, there's some of your 2015 stories when Nate was on the beat covering JEA, and, you know, the mayor sent this email over the weekend, what the hell's going on at JEA, and it led to the removal of the whole board and him placing the board in, which at the moment seemed like, you know, big news, but now seems, you know, even bigger. So it's been interesting to go back and look at stories as you know things later. But
yeah, it's funny to me that I guess some people consider me like this champion of JEA. When I was a reporter and covered JEA, under a previous CEO, I do not think that that old regime considered me some savior of their utility. I mean, I think
yeah,
I feel like I gave them a pretty hard time. But JEA has always had its problems, especially with like public records and transparency. There's always going to be a tension with a city enterprise, this identity that JEA has. Is it sort of a more private type business operation, or is it government? But, you know, there's a big difference between thinking it was never a perfect agency and thinking it should be chopped up and sold off in secret.
Right. I think I've been here almost 20 years now. I'd say this is probably the biggest story, definitely the biggest story that the paper's had. Most influence, most impact. And yet it's interesting, I don't think I can point to a story. So that kind of speaks to how it was tackled by you guys, by Mary Kelly. It was kind of I was going to say drip, 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 but drip doesn't do justice to what was pouring out of there daily. I mean, some days were just mind-boggling, like there'd be something at 10 a.m., and then by 2 a.m., it'd be, 2 p.m., it'd be something even bigger. But yeah, maybe talk about how that strategy, we're going to hold on to it till we get this. And, you know, you could have worked on a story for a month and had this, you know, big story, but instead I think it was incrementally. And I think that was almost, to me, that was effective because it kept it on people's radar and each one advanced it a little bit.
I'll hog the microphone because it's right in front of me. I think, normally, the formula for these, for newspapers doing big investigative efforts, is that you write this one massive story and then you cover, you know, the fallout from that story. That's usually the form it takes. We didn't do that here primarily because I think what we were doing was almost more covering a evolving kind of breaking news situation. I mean, it was complicated because we were trying to do this sort of higher level analysis and digging in around an issue that was happening around us. And and changing, you know, again, every day. And so I think a big part of the complication was just, I mean, literally keeping up with it and not just doing some, you know, surface level write up on it, which would have been pretty easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, what Nate was saying is exactly right. And I also think that this would have been just a huge story if it had just been putting JEA up for sale. But there was so much other stuff that was just spinning off the story that was crazy. And you couldn't have just, you know, you couldn't just sit on that. I mean, there were so many developments and just shocking developments along the way that to have sat back and just, you know, tucked that away and then put it in some big story would have been a real disservice to the readers in terms of actually informing them about what was going on. I mean, there were so many times where, like you say, Mark, 10 o'clock, there'd be a big news story. And then by 3, that had been overshadowed by something even bigger. And you just would come back and go back to people and tell them what happened. And it was just like, you know, it was just galvanizing. So much stuff was dropping off the story. I mean, one of the biggest story obviously wasn't about the actual sale of JEA. It was just this idea of this performance unit plan where, you know, a quasi-stock program where JEA would have sold units to employees and then they would have been able to put in, buy them for $10 a unit and then make $3,000 to $6,000 per unit and become millionaires if JEA were sold. It was just that kind of thing just made it such a compelling, fascinating story to write. And this stuff was just coming loose. Once it started to flow, it was really just a gusher of information there.
Right. I feel like that was obviously that was one of the big turning points. What else, when you look back at the last year, it's all these incremental steps, what would you say would be the big turning points in the story?
It was absolutely the performance unit plan bonus that David was talking about. I mean, up until that point, you know, around the time that came out, like Lenny was speaking to the city council and told them, I will oppose any efforts to derail this process. And, you know, I got the sense that the city council was still very supportive of going through with the process. And I guess we'll never know what would have happened if, you know, the JEA board of directors would have presented them a deal to approve. But, you know, there was an effort by then a minority of the council to simply hire their own attorneys to help them, you know, vet all the information that was coming from JEA. I mean, you know, they couldn't really lean on OGC and they wanted to hire somebody with expertise in the realm of like mergers and acquisitions and somebody who had a little bit of utility experience. And the city council basically kiboshed that. So it wasn't until like details of this performance bonus plan came out that people started to really put their arms up and say, okay, like maybe something really strange and potentially bad is going on at JEA. And I mean, it happened so quickly. I think they announced in like what, in the middle of November, that they were going to cancel this bonus plan. And then a couple days later, the council auditor put a report out. And then by December 17th, you know, Aaron Zahn was suspended. And, you know, that pretty much started the cancellation of the sale talks shortly after that.
It was sitting here talking about it and making me realize, you know, part of what was challenging about the story is like how many different facets there were to it. I mean, you had the sale itself, the process, which seemed questionable. It was secret. So there were questions about public records issues. There were questions about Aaron Zahn himself, you know, the CEO who had no utility experience guiding a utility through a major transaction. This would have been the largest transaction of its kind in the United States. And obviously the sort of his business relationships, it became an issue, you know, these sort of conflict of interest questions, self-dealing by the executives of the bonus plan, the kind of larger debate about, you know, where public power is headed, the political intrigue with the mayor's office, what the city council was doing, the army of consultants that JEA hired, and like, you know, how many people were getting paid while this thing was up for sale, you know, and then just kind of the daily news developments. I mean, it's just a crazy amount of stuff to try to process. And, you know, I'm kind of amazed that we were able to, I think, touch on just about all of those topics over mm-hmm. time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the turning points were when council member Randy DeForest stood up in one of the council meetings and said, we'd be the biggest fools ever if we sold the water side of JEA, and told her colleagues that if you just don't do anything now, you're going to get something delivered to you in a few months, gift wrapped, tied up with a bow, and you're not going to have any insight or influence at all in it. And I think that sort of created the opening for some council members to start asking questions. And then by the time the performance unit plan came in November, there already were a lot of doubts. And so maybe if that came out and that was the only unforced error up to this point, mm-hmm. they could have weathered it out. But there were so many that just created so much suspicion and confirmed so many suspicions that people had, that really became a real blow to it. And then when the state attorney announced that Melissa Nelson, that she was looking into matters, then suddenly people were like, okay, so we know it's bad, but it sounds like it's even worse. And at that point, there never had been throughout public support for doing this. So then it became, you know, the public doesn't want it. There's all these problems with the process. It's could be a potentially a criminal investigation going on. Let's just roll it up and stop.
Right. I felt like another one was when former mayor Jake Godbolt, spoke to the JA workshop, and kind of that felt like this dramatic day because you had one current mayor and three former mayors in that room. And, he still had so much respect in town. I think when he so forcefully spoke out against it, took out this big ad in the Times Union, kind of was classic Jake. I felt like that was this almost cinematic movie-like day in the saga. So that, I think, was another big turning point.
Well, when JEA and the mayor lost the civic council, the kind of business community. You know, as a columnist, I'm really hot and cold on the civic council. They have this kind of weird obsession with charter schools that makes them make bad decisions sometimes. But like, they were really strong on JEA. And after, Jake had sort of been out there, raising the public alarm bells about it, like they got in behind him. And that, that does matter. Like the civic council, those Definitely. Are people who fund political campaigns, and they're also, just kind of busybodies who will bug, council members all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, too, there's this point that, I think the city council was beginning to realize that they were going to have to take a lot of heat for this, and that this issue was not going to go away at the beginning of January. And I think there might have been a little bit of resentment that, I talked to council members, and they're like, every time I go to the grocery store, people are like talking, they won't leave me alone about how much they hate the idea of selling JEA. And, they were in some ways having to take ownership of what was happening at JEA and all of Aaron's problems. And meanwhile, they look to the mayor's office, and the mayor's office is claiming to have like nothing to do with any of this. And, everything that Aaron and JEA was doing was completely, independent of them. And so I just think at some point the council, there must have been a realization that the council didn't want to deal with this anymore. This is, these people were just elected to office. They have other priorities. A lot of them did not sign up to try to sell JEA,
mm-hmm.
and it was going to distract from their agenda. And so I think that played a little bit of part for Lenny to pull the plug.
And I think another story is how much he misread the city's, he said he had the pulse of the city, but how far off he was on the pulse of the city. As you said,
absolutely.
You had these council folks who did seem to be getting the pulse of the city whenever they went out. Everywhere they went, they were hearing about it. And I don't know if he honestly believed that it was not a big issue, or if that was just spin. But he kept saying, I'm not hearing this.
I know he told people that. I don't know if like he legitimately believed that, or if that was an attempt for him to, just deal with, the political pressure that he was dealing with. But I can tell you, I deal with a lot of people who, in a lot of different circles, a lot of people from a lot of different walks of life. Everyone knew about this. Everyone knew like all the details of this story. And I have not talked to anybody outside of like, some of the bubble of people like in city politics who thought having all that money would be a good idea. But I'm talking about like normal people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking to anybody who thought this was a good idea.
Right.
I know people who spend like 5 or 6 months a year on a boat, And they were not only like up to date with everything JEA related, they thought it was a horrible idea. And like their animosity, or you know, they don't trust anyone in City Hall anymore. It's not just with JEA. So yeah, to think that this wasn't an unpopular idea was a huge miscalculation.
Yeah.
I think that Lenny knew that this was not a popular idea. I mean, you would literally have to be living under a rock to have thought that people would be okay with this. I think the issue is that Lenny thinks about public opinion in a bit of a different way than most. You know, he is a political animal, and he has a lot of faith in his team, which really at this point is one guy, his pollster, Tim Baker. And, you know, I think that their analysis of public opinion is not what is popular right now. It's what will win an election after we message something for 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's where I think he sort of falls on all of this. And, you know, I think they miscalculated. I think they took on something that was too unpopular and too controversial, and thought they could weather the storm, and if they could just get to the referendum, that would be enough. And you know, they overreached. I mean, this is just something that, you know, it does happen to matter how popular or unpopular something is sometimes. And I think this was just too much.
So as it started to unravel, did you guys, I'm guessing early on, you know, it's a struggle to get people to talk, to get, you know, public records, and not that the public records changed overnight, but did you find more and more people willing to talk, willing to give you information? It seemed like there certainly was more people willing to go on the record early on. You know, it was kind of the usual suspects. You had Garrett Dennis happy to criticize the mayor. You had for quite a while Matt Carlucci was out there, but it felt like beyond that there weren't a lot of, you're right, until Civic Council. But it's, I'm guessing you also behind the scenes also were getting some of that, where at some point the floodgates open.
Yeah, yes. It's definitely momentum driven. I think when you're talking about people who are at JEA and have a lot to lose, I think at first, you know, they're probably looking to see like where's the story going, and they want to make sure if they're going to give somebody a tip, they want to make sure a reporter's like good
mm-hmm.
and is able to deliver on this. And you know, as more and more stories came out, and I think as it became more and more obvious that Aaron was out the door and that privatization was in real danger of not happening, I think it emboldened people. You know, people, you know, I think could trust that the Times Union was going to, you know, protect their identity and do a story that accurately reflected what was going on. And I think as they were like watched more stories appear in the paper, and it became obvious that some of these stories would not have happened without people inside JEA of doing, you know, helping out the paper, I think that kind of helped our credibility with like encouraging more people to come forward. Because yeah. I mean, I'm not lying. I mean, we were just getting unsolicited tips from people. I mean, we were not like waiting in the JEA parking garage, like doing, you know, hey, Mr. Shoulder Tap. You know, it was just. Some days you'd come in, like, or you'd be checking your email at 10 o'clock at night, and you'd have something in your inbox that was just this explosive tip, and you're like, oh my God, like, this is too easy.
I'll say something, you know, that was a challenge in the beginning. I actually had a former, a JEA employee explain this to me one time, sort of from their perspective, that the employees felt like they killed the first attempt to sell JEA. And when it came back the second time, you know, the employees were tired. And one thing that the mayor's office and Aaron Zahn did do a good job of this time was making sure that if there was a sale, they'd pay off the employees, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think initially there was just a lot of fatigue within, you know, the JEA ranks, and normally the people who would be mobilizing and getting us tips. I mean, there was, like, I think a sense of resignation initially. And again, like, I think the lesson that they took from the first sale attempt was, we just need to make sure we pay everyone. We need to pay the employees. We need to pay the executives. We need to pay, like, the Civic Council. You know, half the city was on JEA's payroll. We need to make sure the city council members get a payday through, you know, we'll promise them all the stuff we can do with all the financial flexibility. I mean, that was the strategy. And that's actually a, you know, pretty good strategy. And so in the beginning, I mean, there really was a total lack of engagement by, you know, in a lot of quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And they may have drawn some JEA in terms of the leadership and the people organizing this probably drew some wrong lessons too from what happened the first time around, because they went the pendulum swung the way the other way in terms of, okay, we're not going to go to city council and have any discussions with them before we put it up for sale. We're not going to go to them and ask them if they'll approve a resolution supporting us taking this step. So everything that was kind of done the first time, they did the opposite of it, but they went so far to the extreme that it became a problem with them as well down the road. It's just a huge, massive undertaking to sell a utility like that, and they really had to execute it flawlessly. And it was far from that. It was really a very poorly executed strategy that they had, other than just trying to hang on to this idea that everybody should just wait until they were finished negotiating a deal. And until then, everything had to be completely confidential and quiet, and because it was all being done behind closed doors through this invitation to negotiate process.
Mm-hmm.
It's really funny that they got to this point. It's like, They thought after the first attempt to sell, like, man, the problem must have been that it just didn't seem shady and corrupt enough. So we need to go ahead and like double down on both of those things. Like, I just don't understand in what universe these people operate where they thought that the way that they were going to sell this thing was going to fly. I mean, it's amazing.
Some what's next, JEA flyers? Yeah, the mailers that went out, very deceptive with what was in those. I mean, things like that.
Imagine what $3 billion could do for your community. Yeah. But no, we're not trying to sell JEA.
Right.
Yeah, these like in these creepy TV ads, they look like they were ripped out of some like, you know, dystopian fantasy. Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah, I was just going to say one thing that was kind of different about covering this story from other stories that I think any of us have covered was there was a real coordinated, if you want to call it that, strategy by JEA to push back on media stories mm-hmm. that they perceived as being unhelpful towards the narrative they were doing. So they would do these a myth.
Setting the record straight, wasn't it called?
Yeah, setting it straight type stuff. And they were very adversarial, and they wouldn't just say, well, here's the record straight. They would like say, well, if David would take the time to understand this basic, simple fact about how, you know, is that kind of stuff. And so they really were trying, I think, to sort of make, to the extent that the media was covering this, just make people out there in the public question that coverage and try to make people more hesitant or tentative about right. really covering this. And it all fit into this idea that until and unless they had a deal, everybody should just sort of just sit back and let's let them do their thing, and then it'll come out and then you can engage.
Yeah, those fact check things were both enormously petty and also like filled with they were filled with lies. Like there were things like, you know, the inspector general at one point sent Aranzon a letter and in short basically said, hey, this is to inform you that we're going to be monitoring this process and we're going to be sitting in on these meetings. You know, we have the authority to do this. Thanks for cooperating. And Zahn sent a letter back that essentially just acknowledged that. And so we reported on it, or maybe I'd put something in a column about this, and they freaked out and they put this fact check out that said something about how it was Zahn who invited the inspector general to monitor these negotiations. And, you know, just this like absurd thing, like that is very much not what happened. I actually tend to think he was quite annoyed that the inspector general informed him that she would be overseeing right. the process. So like, you know, and they had to change that. I mean, it was just like, you know, and ratepayers were paying these outside consultants to put these, you know, these lies together. I mean, they just feel ashamed of themselves.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, implying that we weren't doing our jobs right and we were intentionally lying. I'm waiting on my apology. I think the city of Jacksonville deserves an apology for everyone involved, too. You know, the board of directors, April Green, she's apologized for the role that she played in this. And that is the only person I can think of who has apologized for their role in this. And a lot of these people are still working there.
Well, not only did the setting the record straight backfire, I think, in the public realm, but it clearly backfired in here, because I think I'd hear you guys, how many have you got now? You were keeping track of, it was almost a badge of honor, I think, to have one of those.
Who ended up winning that?
Who won the...
I think Nate probably.
Yeah, well, and, you know, just to, like, I feel like, you know, to make this disclaimer, like, we are always very happy to learn if there is, like, an actual, fact problem in a story or a column. Like, we're eager to correct that kind of stuff. We made light of this because it was just absurd and insulting.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah, yep, definitely. Well, maybe we can, I wanted to wrap it up by spinning ahead, because obviously a lot has happened, but it's far from over. So, right now, maybe get into what lies ahead. We've got investigations going on with state attorneys, feds, city council. Nate, Chris just had the story on the mayor, and Zahn and Scott Wilson, city council president, and then crew of six traveling to a Braves game for, I think, what was the cost? $400. I've had several readers email me saying, I want that deal where a plane ticket on a private plane and tickets to a playoff game. Can I get that for $400? So that's been one. We've got the new board now. So what would you say we can look for, in 2020? 2019 was such an eventful year and just felt like it kept picking up steam as it went along. And I thought, okay, it's going to slow down. And it really hasn't slowed down in 2020.
I think we're all anxious to find out what the federal investigation ends up determining, because that's a huge question in terms of whether laws were broken at all in this. And then there's also a lot to be learned still about how this process led up to the point where they decided to vote to put it up for sale and how the entire negotiations went. It's still shrouded in secrecy. So a lot to learn there for sure. And then, to some extent, how JEA is going to recover from this. I mean, they definitely have a lot of issues. They're going to have a whole new board. They'll have a new CEO. They're going to have new management in place. They still have... Look, the thing with JEA was never as gloomy and dire as they painted it to be. On the other hand, this is not an agency that is without problems and challenges, mm-hmm. and those are there too. And they may have to raise rates. There may be a lot of different things there to watch in terms of how JEA goes forward.
Hmm. Yeah, I actually, everything David said. I mean, especially this like federal investigation. That's crazy and something that we'll just have to see what happens with. But yeah, I mean JEA. I mean, the real tragedy of this is the JEA really does have headwinds that it's going to be facing in the coming years. All utilities do. But instead of spending money and time and resources figuring out how to tackle those problems, Zahn and his like merry band of privateers spent lavishly on themselves and on this sham process. And so instead of figuring out what to do about real problems, we basically now have a hollowed out agency filled with pissed off and dispirited employees, poorer than it was before. It's probably JEA's probably light about $30 or $40 million that it burned through on this privatization process. And for what? Now JEA is less nimble and less able to face the future confidently because we've blown 2 years on this deeply unpopular thing no one wanted, no one asked for. Mm-hmm. And I think that how JEA navigates that is really critical. I mean, the new whoever comes on board to run the place has really got a hell of a job ahead for him.
Mm-hmm. I think Chris, during this, said there were times when it'd be funny, Mary Kelly would get emails or calls, where's the phishing report? Some people, they wanted their JEA news, but they were upset that Chris did not have his phishing report.
Prediction is there's going to be a few more phishing reports in the newspaper between now and then. I think it's the JEA stuff is not an all hands on deck situation, but yeah, we're going to be covering everything. And if there's anything, I tell everyone this on the phone when I interview them, say we're at a point right now where I don't know if it's going to be a month from now, 2 months from now, or a year from now. I think everything that happened is going to come out. So I try to tell people that before I interview them, trying to encourage them to be up as upfront as they're comfortable doing. Because I really do believe at the end of the day, whether it's a month from now, 2 months from now, or a year from now, we're going to know exactly what happened with all this JEA stuff.
So yeah.
That's my prediction. A year from now, we're going to have full picture of everything that happened.
All right. Well, yeah, an amazing job by the three of you last year. It's just incredible stuff. So you deserved all the pats on the back you've gotten. And look forward to seeing what's coming in 2020.
Thanks, Mark.